because Bill Gates is an idiot. And that is where the podcast should start.
would an idiot release a swarm of mosquitoes into a packed amphitheater? Yes. That's the answer is yes.
Either that or the Joker.
Yes, he did do that at one point, though.
I reiterate my statement.
Yep.
Anyways, hi everyone, welcome to the Semi-Bookish Podcast.
We're here for you.
We're here for you. I'm literally only here today for this podcast.
Okay. That's true, you are. I don't know why I said that as if I did not know.
But anyways, hi everyone, how's it going?
Hey. It's going. I mean, you know.
But anyways.
It's not bad.
So welcome to the Semi-Bookish Podcast. We are Adrian Fiery's podcast.
We are scattershot and bizarre today, but it's fine.
It's eclipse season, you know? Just give us a little bit of leeway.
That's what it is.
It's next week.
The stars and planets are realigning.
Yep.
Exactly. So I think
in the heavens.
I think today we should get started with what we're reading. Tony.
Okay. All right. So, everyone who is listening who follows me on Facebook, stop.
Okay, I'll stop right now.
But I will start with what I'm reading, and then I will branch off into a couple of other entertainment venues because, I can. So I am currently doing a deep dive into X-Men comics because I have never read any of them because I didn't grow up reading comic books. But I, at 5 years old, imprinted on X-Men the Animated Series, and since they've rebooted that on Disney Plus to glorious fashion, I have to reconnect with my base, you know.
Your roots.
Storm and Wolverine and Storm. And
Gambit,
Professor Xavier and Storm
and Rogue
and of course Gambit the Bi King.
I think you said Storm a few times.
And Storm, yeah. Just so that everyone recalls who the most powerful X-Men really is. Her name is Storm, and her baby daddy is T'Challa. Anyway, no, that's really true. Black Riders got a hold of Storm, and they were like,
"Oh yeah,
she should be with T'Challa."
Don't we have a whole entire comic out here in the stacks about Storm and T'Challa?
Written by that lovely, he's dead now, but this lovely, beautiful black man who only wrote black erotica, Eric Jerome Dickey.
Sounds familiar. Oh, yeah, he just died a few years ago.
Yeah, just a few years ago, yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
so if he introduced the idea of Storm and T'Challa, I'm ready.
You're like, well, okay, that's it. That's all we got to talk about.
Yeah, like there was a core contingent of Black Panther fans who literally hated the presence of Nakia because they were like, I'm sorry, where's Storm? And so I'm deep diving. I'm having a good time. I'm starting with the Chris Claremont run from late 70s, 80s. So it would have been the stuff that the animated series was drawing from most directly. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see how it differs from Stan Lee's, because Stan Lee's are all black and white comics, and it predates any kind of visual X-Men. Like, so it was literally for people who read comic books or who read Marvel comics.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend of mine say to me once, I think that I have the duty to tell you that there is no charm in those, and you should just try reading other people's X-Men. And I was like, okay, but I want to find that out for myself. Anyway, so I'm reading X-Men. My only other real piece of news, entertainment-wise, other than the fact that I'm replaying all the Arkham games and...
Of course.
I'm just about to fight Poison Ivy for the first time in... not for the first time in my life, but in Arkham Asylum.
In this run.
In this run, yeah. One, I forgot how much I really don't like Arkham Asylum, because you don't have any of the controls that you have on the rest of the series. So when Arkham Asylum was the only one, it was great. But then the rest of them came along and it was like, ooh, this is progressively the worst game of the series. Actually, it is the worst game of the series. It's even worse than Arkham Origins.
I was going to mention Arkham Origins because I know a lot of people don't like that one.
It's like playing Resident Evil and having one specific where you're like, okay, these controls are fine. And then you play the later games and you're like, oh, I can move everywhere. And then going back to the older ones and then you're like... Oh, why did I like this in the first place?
Yeah, I'm a big Arkham Origins apologist. I completely understand why people dislike that game, but I love it.
Fair.
So, yes, I'm doing that. But the other piece of news, I don't know if anyone's been paying attention to, you know, the world, but...
Kind of, not really.
There's a new Beyonce album out.
Oh yeah, yesterday. You told me all about that.
I did. And I have been listening to it for 4 days.
Straight?
Because I can't help myself. I start my mornings with Texas Hold'em.
Nice.
Because that little guitar riff just gets me every time. And honestly, I want to line dance every time I hear that song. So
I think
I'm
there are line dances.
Let's stop.
Yeah. Line dancing to my favorite artist. Like, it doesn't get better than that. I mean, I know country music people, you do it all the time, but, you know, I'm black.
Oh, they're doing pop songs now.
I know. My brother's a big line dancer. And then the other song I listen to every morning is Ya Ya, because it's just fun and ridiculous, mm-hmm. and it has the stupidest name given to any song.
What was it called? Ya Ya?
Ya Ya. Yeah, like Ya-Ya. The Ya Ya Sisterhood. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's... You know, I actually told my best friend last night, I was like, I know you, you're going to hate that song. So she texted me at lunch day and she was like, yeah, I'm passing on Cowboy Carter and you were right. Yaya irritates me. And I was like, I know you. So
is the song itself vaguely irritating or is it just the
it
title?
And very catchy.
Very catchy.
And if you're not into catchy, repetitive, because the background vocals are singing this like riff of Yaya that is just addictive.
If you're not prepared for it, you'll get an earworm and then it'll be stuck in your head all day. And then you're just like, oh my God, I'd wish I had a different song in my head. And then you get that. And then you're like, nope, never mind. I wish we'd go back to Yaya. And so you're just like switching between it all the time.
Everything Aaron just said. Everyone seems to be in love with spaghetti. I don't really get it. I'm more like, for me, my favorites other than the two I just named are all of the more quieter ones. Blackbird
is Supremacy.
Blackbird a
Supremacy.
Cover of the Beatles song?
No, Stevie Nicks.
It's not.
It's a cover more of the Stevie Nicks song. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
it's
I'm not mistaken, it sounds to me like the Fleetwood Mac version was written by Paul McCartney originally, and then covered it. I didn't realize
it's like
that.
Okay.
Yeah, but I know that Beyonce and Stevie Nicks are fans of each other because Stevie Nicks has said that in the years past, and Beyonce has been like, you guys know I stole the track line for Bootylicious, right? Like, it wasn't mine, it was hers, and put some respect on her name. So it was nice to see that happen. I love what she did with Jolene. I love that Dolly Parton co-signed it.
Like the album.
She covered Jolene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then Dolly has a little piece like right before the song starts where she's just like, you tell her, girl. You tell him about Jolene. You're Jolene.
It's great because it feels like, you know, the author of Jolene is saying, I did my version, but you're Beyonce here. And it's fun. Like, it's really fun to hear with permission, you know, that kind of change, because there's some changes, but to me, it feels like the black woman's Jolene, which is so much better than Beyonce's Jolene, because, you know, she's still with Jay-Z. Anyway, I have finished.
Hey, Grant,
what are you reading, Grant?
Right now, I'm reading The Anatomy of Human Destructiveness by Eric Frome.
Well, that sounds much smarter than anything I just said.
What? No, it's,
The chuckle he gave tells you everything that it's not.
I don't know. Anyways, so it kind of tackles the age-old debate of, like, nature versus nurture, society versus, you know, instincts and whatnot.
Sure.
And he kind of takes a middle path, because, you know, he's kind of the peacemaker in this situation, I guess. Yeah, I'm not super far. He has a very easy-to-understand writing style.
That's always nice.
It is nice. I'm reading that. I'm also starting Psychology and the Soul by Otto Rank. I'm continuing my rank reading.
Okay. Yeah, your rank reading.
So my rank reading, yes. So that's like, I'll have to rank them afterwards. Funny, haha.
We broke Grant, guys. That's what we did. Yeah.
We haven't even started into what's going on today. We already broke him. Okay.
Well, we threatened him in the park before he clocked in, so he's a little shaken.
Yeah.
In the park, yeah. Yeah, that was a very scary situation.
Out in Library Square?
There was a bag over my head. It took me on a drive around the block. It was very scary.
Okay.
I tried to get his roommate to dress up like Deadpool. He said no. So,
I'm sorry.
It's fine.
Are you doing anything else?
Am I doing anything else?
Are you reading anything else? Playing anything
reading
else?
Anything
watching?
Else? No. Yeah, I've watched some movies. Let's take a look at what I've watched recently. Come on, guys.
Movie minute.
Movie
Grant.
Minute. Yeah.
I feel like it needs its own theme song to go with it. Movie minute with Grant.
Kind of did a double feature the other night.
Oh.
I watched The Beach Bum.
Oh, okay.
Matthew McConaughey.
Oh,
how was it? And many other cameos from like Snoop Dogg. It's wild. You got Snoop Dogg, you got Martin Lawrence, you got Jonah Hill. You have. It's just a grab bag.
What is this movie?
It's wild. I mean, whether it's good is another. That's another thing. I like the director.
Oh, okay.
I really like some of his earlier stuff. This one's more I'm almost certain that 97% of this movie was improvised, which would make sense with his previous stuff. But he tries to wrap in more or less a plot line into this, and I think it works to varying degrees.
Sure.
But it's a very funny movie. Just I definitely wasn't expecting Jonah Hill to emerge with a New Orleans accent.
Oh, and New Orleans.
I learned that if you are going to go see a movie and you find out Jonah Hill is in it by him walking on screen, you're going to be surprised invariably.
No, I mean, he's a good actor. Yeah, he is more than people give him credit for.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
So yeah, at the very least, it's a very fun movie.
In fact, I feel like Jesse Plemons is a... I wish I was as impressed with Jesse Plemons as I often am with Jonah Hill. Mm. Jonah Hill picks worse movies, so I would rather watch Jesse Plemons movies, but I wish he had more of a gift similar to Jonah's. Maybe I'm wishing for the wrong thing.
I really like Jesse Plemons as well. Mm. I wish he would go as hard as he did in Breaking Bad. Because his character Breaking Bad is very memorable.
Sure.
For me, nothing's quite reached that level, but he's always
it's a hard level to reach.
Yeah, he's consistently excellent, so I'm always happy to see him.
What was the other movie?
Dream Scenario with Nick Cage.
And
I really enjoyed it. It's very interesting. If you don't know, he plays kind of a hapless...
I love it when they're hapless.
Like, yes, hapless... tenured professor, very boring professor.
Sure.
And then, so you kind of follow him around his life for a little bit, and then people around the world start seeing him in their dreams.
Oh, okay.
And he kind of becomes an overnight celebrity in that fashion, and despite his, he has a very strong need for like acceptance and like people taking him seriously and whatnot.
That is a really different way of doing dream magic. That's interesting.
Yeah, and so a normal person may say, maybe I want to keep this on the down low or something, you know.
Right.
But he wants to get his book published. He decides to go on the news and on podcasts and stuff, and it goes very once the dreams start not being so nice, people start to turn on him, and it's kind of an exploration of, fame and all that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah. No, it's really good. It's very depressing.
It's definitely
a cautionary tale. But I recommend it.
Okay. Yeah. Right, cool. Dream Scenario.
Dream Scenario does some cool stuff.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna check that out because that sounds really interesting. And I love Nicolas Cage is another one that I'm like.
No, he's there's nobody else.
Quite like him.
Doing what Nick Cage does.
It's true. The one thing about Nicolas Cage that I will say is if you want to feel bad about yourself as a human being because you just watched one too many Nicolas Cage movies, skip like a whole decade of his work. Like in
outside of like National Treasure, the early 2000s wasn't particularly good.
Right. Yeah.
But when you watch an interview with the guy, his love for film and the art of acting definitely comes through. And there's a method to his madness.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like if you want to get a good glimpse of like early Nick Cage, Gone in 60 Seconds, one of the National Treasures, you're good. And keep moving. Maybe there's one. Lord of War? Is that what it's called?
Lord of War is very good.
Lord of War is very good. So that's another one if you really want like a good one. But Gone in 60 Seconds is a waste of time. It's boring. It's a car movie. Aaron, as I will call you from now on, Lady in the Hello Kitty sweater, because I'm obsessed with that sweater.
I got it at Kohl's.
I'm gonna need for y'all to stop telling me where to shop because one day.
I don't know if they still exist. I got it like a few weeks ago. It was in the junior section.
Oh, well, I can't shop there.
I did hear yesterday there's a huge sale going on at Kohl's currently, so maybe it's the same sale. I don't know.
Oh, maybe.
Just saying.
Okay. Anyways. Aaron, what are you reading right now before we dive into the book discussion?
So first of all, I'm playing one. I'm playing Swanhaven right now because I'm just continuing it onwards. Cute little farming game, fantasy game. Love it. It really helped me when I'm trying to, like, read audiobooks and stuff, mm-hmm. because it's mindless and I don't have to spend a lot of mental capacity trying to figure out what's going on screen, and I can spend some more mental capacity listening and processing things in the book.
Yeah.
As opposed to when I'm playing my other game, which I'm playing Dragon's Dogma 2.
Yes.
Anyways, love it so much. I loved the first game.
Yeah.
I thought it was great, but the second game isn't that bad. I do know a lot of people are, like, kind of ranting about, like, there's not a lot of variety in the monsters yet. But, like, we just got, like, one, you gotta get out of the Meadows area and into the desert, because once you get out of there, there's more variety.
Oh, sure.
And for people, like, and one thing I will say is, yes, there are a few timed quests, but, like, honestly, don't rush your way through the game. Like, don't go, like what I watched a bunch of other people do and, like, steamroll it through in like 20 or so hours and then complain that the game has absolutely, you know, like, no substance.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, explore around the area, hire other people's pawns, like, play around, because, like, one of the things that I enjoy out of the game is the fact that you can just run around places with the other pawns, and you can just listen to them banter with each other for like 10 minutes straight. Yeah. Like, and they will just banter with each other, and if I'm on a specific quest or something, like, and that pawn has previous knowledge of the quest because their main character has already completed it, they will lead you to where you need to go. There's no such thing as, like, here's your point marker. Like, you know, like how in Skyrim or Fallout or any of, like, the other games today, they, like, point you in a specific direction and they go, like, you need to go this way.
Yeah.
If you don't have a pawn who has previous knowledge of the quest, or your pawn has not gone out on a previous quest, you will have no idea where you're going sometimes.
Can you use context clues, though?
There are context clues in the journal entries that you get, but, like, the characters will go, oh, well, my master and I went to this space, and they will lead you to where you need to go.
Gotcha.
Sometimes through shortcuts or through their own special ways, so you go through other things that you normally wouldn't have, but, like, they will take you through things, or they will mention, like, sometimes you can add, like, little, like, quests for your pawns to do. So right now mine is, like, fight an ogre and win. If they are fighting that monster at the moment, they will literally tell your character, hey, my master told me I need to fight this monster. Like, can we get rid of it?
Yeah.
Like, can we actually do this? And then once you win, he's like, great, I'll let my master know, and you get a reward for it. Like, it's really great that way.
Yeah.
I will say, even though they're like, here, there's romance in it, there's really not. Would I love there to be a DLC that expands upon the system? Yes. Is there probably going to be one? Absolutely not. But
fair.
I think the game is good for what it releases for. Is it worth $70? No, I would wait till it goes on sale, but sure. I would say it's a pretty good AAA game, especially now that they've added a new game option in the main menu. There's still only one save file, but you can now start a new game whenever you want, so that's nice.
Yeah.
And then I'm also reading, opposed to this, because, you know, I'm reading a good fantasy trilogy, and so now I have to read a bad fantasy trilogy to balance it out. I'm reading the Iron King series by Julie Gagawa, which is just your basic fairy love triangle thing, where the girl is basically like, pick me, and, you know, just two fairy men who are vying for her hand, and she's like, not the second male lead, this really dark and broody one over here. sometimes it makes me really want to take a nap for at least 100,000 years. But speaking of 100,000 years, dark and broody characters.
Before you talk about this, though, I just want to point one thing out. My favorite game from last year that I played 5 times in a row because I'm an insane person.
Fair.
Has been nominated for a Hugo Award.
Ooh, what is it?
Jedi Survivor.
Oh, really? Of course. It's been nominated for Hugo.
I really don't think it's going to win. It doesn't have, I mean, all the other games that it's up against, including Baldur's Gate 3.
Baldur's Gate will win.
Got way more attention. And Baldur's Gate 3 in the SFF community, who has to vote for the Hugos, is going to, that just hand in glove.
No, I had Baldur's Gate, like, won Game Awards too, and everyone was, like, so mad about it.
But
I'm
honestly,
like, LOL, cry about it.
I've heard,
it's great writing.
Yeah, I've heard that Baldur's 3 is absolutely wonderful, so I don't hate that Jedi Survivor is going to lose to that, but I also think that put some respect on the game's name, okay?
Yes.
Because if you've not played Fallen Order and then played Survivor, one of the things that makes Asylum and City so bad as like a pairing is that once you've played City, playing Asylum is unbearable. Once you've played Survivor, Fallen Order makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And they are growing the character literally as you play him. Brilliant writing. It is so game writing. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yes,
it's not
yes.
just
no.
You know, it's
that
it's,
makes sense. And Baldur's Gate writing. Does that really well as well. But granted,
yeah.
that is a Larian thing who wrote Baldur's Gate 3, and I know Fallen Order is completely Fallen Order
yeah.
and Survivor are two separate entity from a separate entity, but like
yeah.
Larian does that really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And this is coming from somebody who played the Divinity games that they have.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Divinity Original Sin and Original Sin 2.
Mm-hmm.
Both are very small games, and it was through there being a lot of traction around Original Sin 2 that Baldur's Gate 3 actually got to be, like, a thing.
Oh, that's cool.
Because they got enough money through Original Sin because, you know, Original Sin was originally, like, a really tiny, like, Kickstarter kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the writing, you know how everyone talks about how really good the writing is for Baldur's Gate 3?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's also tracks for Divinity Original Sin and Divinity Original Sin 2.
Okay.
A lot of that writing is very similar where they have that style.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I really liked about Larian style writing is the characters will grow.
Mm-hmm.
And you can listen to their backstories, and it doesn't feel overwhelming or like you're doing a lot.
Yeah.
And the companion quest lines or things that you're doing for companions don't feel like it's overtaking what the main story is because it just flows.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing with Divinity Original Sin 2, though, is a lot of times because you only get three companions in Divinity Original Sin 2 and you can't swap people out because there's a plot point that goes with it that I'm trying not to spoil for people, but there's a plot point in which you start with six, but you only get three.
Interesting. Okay.
There's a reason for it,
yeah.
and it makes sense later on, but, like, dependent on the characters you choose for your companions,
mm-hmm.
their quest lines will overlap each other, and if you're not careful, like, some characters, like, there's this elf lady,
mm-hmm.
if you take her on a certain quest where another guy has a whole entire quest line that also coincides,
mm-hmm.
if you don't leave her somewhere else and go talk to the guy first, it's kill on sight. Kill on sight.
So is it similar to the way that when Yaina leaves CA behind to go do what Yaina has to do?
Yeah.
So, what do I mean when I say these things, Aaron? What am I talking about?
So
what
today,
are these weird names I just threw at you?
Today we're doing our third installation of our book discussion series, and we are discussing Tony's pick this time. We are discussing The 100,000 Kingdoms by N.K. Jemisin, and out of everyone in this room, I think both Grant and Tony have finished it, and I'm halfway through.
Yes. Grant,
but
yes.
I'm enjoying it so far.
Excellent.
I'm also
it's a big book.
I'm listening to it via audiobook, and the audiobook is 11 hours long.
And you're how many hours? About, like,
halfway through.
Okay. Yeah, not bad. Okay, yeah.
I'm on, like, technically it's, like, chapter 9.
Yeah.
But, like, I know there's, like, 28 chapters, but, like,
fair.
That's
you know,
fine.
11 hours, is, like, you know, a fairly standard, right? Whereas, like, I keep thinking about, because I want to go back and finish it, but it is 45 hours
what?
Long. And I know, Stormlight Archive readers, that's a short Brandon Sanderson novel. Calm down. Nobody asked you. So, 100,000 Kingdoms.
Why did you choose this book, Tony?
Okay, so I chose this book for this series because of all of the many, many writers that I love, not many, many, of the writers that I love and respect,
mm-hmm.
only Jemisin is right up there with Toni Morrison for me.
Wow.
In terms of, like, influence on me as a
That's
writer.
That's high praise, by the way, everyone.
Huge. But also just what they're able to accomplish with the same 26 letters as everybody else in the English language. Their brains work very differently on the page. Like, you know, reading a Toni Morrison novel and a N.K. Jemisin novel are not the same experience. And yet, they are both extremely masterful in ways that if you don't understand the subtlest energies of writing a story, there are things you're going to miss.
That's fair.
And I've reread both of them, like my favorite books from both of them, and The 100,000 Kingdoms will always be my favorite N.K. Jemisin book. I finally, of course, finished fifth season, you know, and I really love it, and I think it's masterful. It made me angry. The 100,000 Kingdoms is special to me just because it was the very first book by a black woman that I ever read. Mm-hmm. I was 22.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Lifelong reader, by the way, and that was the first time that it happened. But also because it was a fantasy novel, and she wasn't afraid to go out there and say, yes, this is a fantasy novel. And this is before, like, the whole, like, you know, everyone wants their own version of a story made just for themselves, you know what I mean? Because it was, what, 2008? So nobody was running around saying things like, I said this, I based this on Africa, you know, whatever. So she was saying, I wrote this book, and it is a fantasy book because I'm a geek like the rest of you. You know what I mean? Like, and I had never... And she sounds like... She looks and kind of... She favors my aunt a little, like my mom's sister. Yeah. And so there was all of those components led me to that book. And I, every time I read it, I'm just like, yep. Yep, it hits all the right spots.
I think this is my first black fantasy.
Ooh.
Well, I mean, I've already read...
The rest like, I'll try. They're not...
Because I've read black authors before, but I think this is my first, like, actual black fantasy.
Yeah. There's a reason that she is, according to her website, the most celebrated science fiction and fantasy writer of her generation. And even Sanderson has said that. He's like, oh, yeah, she's doing way more than I could ever do. And I'm like... Kudos. So I really love The 100,000 Kingdoms, though, just because it's... It does a lot with first person that I just didn't know you could do at the time.
It's doing a lot, you know? That I don't hate yet.
Yeah, because, you know, remember 2008, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was the biggest series apart from... The two series were Hunger Games and Twilight, right?
Both written in first
person. So if you're a big YA reader, like I was at the time, it is comfortable to find a favorite genre book... fantasy written in that first person, because one of the cardinal rules of fantasy at the time was you do not write in first person if you're writing a secondary world, because, well, Tolkien didn't do it. No one would ever actually say that unless you pushed them on it, but that's what they meant. So when word got around that 100,000 Kingdoms was written in first person by angry fantasy reviewers, I was like, oh, that sounds comfortable. So I pick it up and read it, and I was like, wait, you can be good at first person? I didn't know you could do it. Really? And I, every time. So, those are my reasons for choosing that one. Thanks. What did we think?
Erin, I feel like you should go to you first.
I'm halfway through right now. Tony's been listening to me rant about this for, like, the past couple days, though. So, anything that I'm about to say, Tony has already, like, been listening to me, like... screech in either group chat format or to them IRL, like when I see them in the workroom or something.
Wait, I don't work here. What are you talking about? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just kidding.
And so I started it. I didn't start it reading it, like full stop reading it. I just went straight to audiobook format. Reason being is because I found that this kind of helps me understand the characters a little bit more at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Is because there's some emotion and inflection that, like, well, I'll get it. I want to hear how the audiobook narrator gets to it first. And plus, with pronunciation of names, if somebody is already pronouncing it, especially because this is set in a secondary world, first of all. But second, like, some of these names, like, the way that they're spelled, I would not know that they're pronounced this way.
It's true.
So listening to somebody in audiobook format actually pronounce the names correctly helps me go, okay, this is exactly what we're saying, and we're not trying to do things.
Yeah.
I will say, as much as everyone knows how much I, like, loathe first person for things, and it's no fault to anyone except for me, of just my brain just going, ick, every single time.
Yeah.
I'm not mad about the first person for once.
I feel like it lends itself to a certain, like, sense of humor that you can only get with first.
It really does. Like, and I really... enjoy Yaena as a character so far.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In my head, I always pronounce it as like Yine or Yane or something.
I did too until I think Yaena. It was either in the... Does the audiobook pronounce it that way? Yaena. I think the first time I listened to the audiobook...
they don't spell it out. They just immediately go, hi, my name's Yaena. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, her name's Yaena. And I thought it was spelled like Elena, but like with a Y-E-N-A.
Oh, that's right, because you're listening to it. Yeah, you haven't read it. So yeah.
Even though I'm looking at it at the same time on the book, but I wasn't paying attention when it was saying that. But...
Yeah.
Doesn't make me mad. I like Yaina as a character mm-hmm. only because of the fact that, like, she's 19, and half of the stuff she's doing just sounds like a stupid 19-year-old. And I understand, because I was once a stupid 19-year-old, and I just understand the, like, for some weird reason, Yaina and I are just kind of like, hello, we're eye-to-eye on the way that we are, because she's really stubborn. I'm also really stubborn. And so both of us as like people, I'm like, I understand why you're so upset. You go, girl. I don't care how right they seem. You throw them into the fire. You are angry, and I understand. I got you, girl. Like, every single time she says something, I'm just like, okay. And then there are some times where I'm like a little bit like, oh, that's cringy sounding, because I get secondhand embarrassment really easily when I read books, surprisingly. That makes sense. But like, she does it, and then like, I'm like, and that's like the same thing with like romance ics that I get later on. But like, I do like the characters. Sia's a lot of fun. If you listen to it in the audiobook format, the lady who's Cassandra Ferguson, who is the one narrating it, she sounds like the Boondocks characters, like the kids the TV show.
Yeah.
Which I think honestly just makes it even funnier, because she is supposed to be a kid. And I'm like, oh, so we're doing this. And so, like, I have this headcanon, especially because he's apparently, like, Nahado's, like, kind of, like, kid. Mm-hmm. Kid adjacent. Kid. Now that I'm farther in the book, kid adjacent. But it makes sense, and so my brain is like headcanning him looking like one of the Boondocks characters, but like real life Boondocks character.
Actually, that
it just fits
that
him.
Is accurate for CA in so many ways.
I'm thinking like a Puck character. Like a Puck, like Midsummer Night's Dream, because he's a trickster.
Because he is a trickster,
but like,
yeah.
Dreads kind of thing going on, a little bit shorter, maybe to like his either his chin or maybe his shoulders. Uh-huh. That sometimes you just see him and he'll pop up in the room, and I just see like he's got these like really like high ponytails for like a hot second, and his hair, and they're just sticking out random ways just because he can. And
I
it just
can't
fits
remember
him.
Does the book, because it's been a while since I've actually like read mm-hmm. it. I was gonna read it this year. Did that happen? No. I might finish it later this year. Anyway. But I can't remember. Is CA described as bald?
I'm
because
not sure.
Because when I read it, I saw him as bald.
I'm not sure.
Remind me who CA is. Is that the...
He's the kid god.
The kid god,
yeah,
okay. Yes.
Who plays with worlds like bowling balls.
Yeah, and he shows up later in the trilogy. Okay.
Yeah, because the Kingdom of Gods narrator. Is that what it is?
I believe so,
I think
yeah.
So. Yeah, yeah. Which has always made Kingdom of Gods something I really, really want to get to.
Oh, you've never read it?
I have not. So I've only read the first of... that trilogy, the first of 100,000 Kingdoms, or the first of, you know, the Broken Earth trilogy, and then I read, like, the first half of the first of her duology, the Dreamblood duology, which actually I think you would really like, because it's using, like, Jung's,
I mean, I have
dream theory yeah. as magic.
Yeah, Jung is fun. I don't like him as a theorist. But...
yeah, I think actually she does say that in her notes at the end of the book. She's like, yeah, just for anybody who thinks that I'm a Jungian, I'm not. But it was a fun way to play with like dreams and dream magic. So it's mm-hmm. really, it's fun. It was interesting. But it's a tough book just because it's...
yeah, they don't have a description of what he actually looks like.
Okay, that makes sense. Because Yaina doesn't necessarily describe...
the
characters
only person,
all that much, except Nahados, because reasons.
She's in love with him.
Well, yeah, reasons.
Anyway,
yes, exactly.
But like, he just seems to be like, in my opinion.
Oh, I know. I pictured him with a bald head because I pictured him as Aang.
Oh. Oh yeah. No, I'm just picturing him as this kid with dreads, and sometimes he just like puts them up like this, like he's got pipe cleaners in him.
See, now I'm
like,
gonna have to read it with that in mind, because that actually is rather entertaining.
No, it just makes him more entertaining because he's supposed to be the stricter character, and you just see this kid. And all of a sudden she starts talking to him, and she's talking to him, and all he gets pretty serious at times. And I just came with the little pipe cleaner things in his head, just like turn to her and like tilt his head like a dog.
Yep.
And you just see him, and you see his face just kind of like get this like frown on his face, like he's like, I'm not entirely sure, but like I'll give you like the best answer I got without trying to sound too trickstery.
Yeah.
And it just fits him.
Yeah.
I did guess Nahado as the main like romance character for like
well,
really
I mean,
fast.
It's kind of, it's literally like, that's one of my favorite things about reading The 100,000 Kingdoms is that on the one hand, the narrator is just telling you stuff because
mm-hmm.
that's you have to know stuff.
I was bored up until the fact where they had that scene where it's Samina, I think is their name.
Yes, pretty much, yeah.
Samina and Namino are standing on top of a different floor. And so they're basically how I kind of see it is like there's like a little like... And nobody can exactly see what I'm drawing except for the
Is this the very first meeting with them?
Yes, where, this is the first meeting. Where
lets him loose?
Like, there's, like, a little, like, tunnel. Yeah. There's, like, a little, like, tunnel bridge kind of thing. And I see, like, a little, like, over arch kind of thing. Like, you're hanging, like, on a balcony and they're up there.
Yeah.
And you're going underneath the tunnel thing, like, you're when you're driving. Kind of like that. Except, you know, I can kind of see, like, glass, like, in there instead. And it's... Yeah. I have thoughts of how it looks. But, like, just the way she describes him, at first I was like, so either he's going to be either this character that kills her, or attempts to kill her, spoiler alert, he tries, or he's the love interest, because she's describing, like, all these people looking exactly like her, or half like her, and she seems really salty about it, right? This whole entire time, she's just, like... Salt personified is this woman, Yaina, because, like, it's one, true. She doesn't even want to be there. She just wants to go
back home. Salty wife.
She's just salty. She wants to go home. She doesn't want to be here. She thought this was going to be, like, a two-minute-long thing where he, like, summons her, the grandfather summons her, and then just, like, she can go home. That's all she wants, right? And so she's describing everybody as salty, or, like, in a salty way, and then she sees him... Mm-hmm. And she can't quite pinpoint exactly what he looks like.
Samina?
No.
Nahado.
Nahado.
Gotcha.
And she can't pinpoint exactly because he seems to be like, and this is something that she notes later on, it's like he just changes kind of like the shape of how he looks.
Yes.
And it's just kind of like this never-ending like shape-shift thing. Mm-hmm. She's seeing that like right away and she's like describing it. She's saying that he looks really pretty and like da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, oh my god, here we go. Okay, so he is the love interest or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then we get to the scene where she's trying to go to sleep and all the walls are just the brightest thing on the planet, which I don't understand how
I forgot about that aspect. The whole city is glowing.
It is glowing.
And I'm like, ugh, that's gotta be disgusting.
Like, how does anybody sleep?
I have to sleep in pitch darkness. So, like, I understand her completely, and he just pops in and he's like, okay, I'll just turn off the lights for you. And, like, just turns it all off. And I'm just like, oh yeah, there it is right there, the main couple. Great. And then I told Tony right afterwards that if this gets any further from just like slight things, I'm like, if this goes any spicier, I'm probably going to get the ick like halfway through, because sometimes I occasionally do that.
Something that I learned about N.K. Jemisin while reading the fifth season, because it crops up in 100,000 Kingdoms, it crops up in the first book of the Dreamblood duology, which is called The Killing Moon, in case anyone wants to read it. And it also pops up in the fifth season, which is the first book of the... So the first book of each trilogy has this, or each series that she's done... with the exception of the Great Cities trilogy, which has queer people all over the place. But anyway, she loves writing throuples. So, just know that.
I'm like, where's the third? Is it the other brother who hasn't shown up yet?
Honestly, again, I need to read this book again, like, in totality. Because I don't remember... If there is a throuple, isn't there in there?
There's a lot that like I don't brief. Remember as well.
Yeah.
There's supposedly one.
I know that at some point in the trilogy there is a throuple.
Okay, that's what I thought. I couldn't remember if it was 100,000 Kingdoms or if it was just something that comes later. Because again, I actually don't remember very much about it.
But I will
say, N.K.
Jemisin is a really, really good writer when it comes to not exactly foreshadowing, but like kind of insinuating things. And then you getting the insinuation and immediately just going, oh. Because there was a scene with Sia, and Sia's like basically like, I want to sleep in your bed. And Yaina's...
he's a kid, and he's like, what's the big deal?
Yaina's like, no, because, I can honestly see Yaina's point at that moment, because Yaina's like, you're underage, no.
And
like,
she's 19, and she's in this world where nothing goes her way.
And she doesn't realize the reason why C is asking to sleep in the bed. Like, there's a whole completely separate reason. And so Yaina's like, I'm taking this, like, this direction.
but don't you understand, Aaron? He's thousands of years old. It's a completely different situation.
No, and then she proceeds to ask, he proceeds to...
Edward Cullen on line one.
She's like, well, like... no, because you're too young. And he's like, well, I can be older. And she's like, do people ask you that? And he's like, no, they ask me to be younger.
I forgot.
And I immediately get this ick.
Yeah, they go very Harkonnen.
I am sitting in the back room.
I forgot about that too.
Like, legitimately behind the wall right now, like, on my desk. I get that segment. Tony walks in a couple minutes later, by the way.
That's right.
And I sat there and I just stared at it and I just went, oh, ew.
You do feel bad for
okay.
That is another feature of N.K. Jemisin's writing, is that...
I thought that was masterfully done.
Yeah, she is very good at taking things that we take for granted in our world, right? Like, enslavement.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, it happened. What's the big deal, right? And then puts a character that you fall in love with
in... And he does it so nonchalantly.
Exactly.
Which is horrifying.
Exactly.
And you also see that with, who was it? Her half-cousin, who's basically her main servant, who looks almost exactly like her, except for, like, maybe a couple different features, and I can't remember his name.
Oh, yeah.
But he follows her around, and he kind of tends to point her in the right direction, which is really nice, to have that little, like, nudge, go this way. And it seems to be like he's protecting her, but I'm wondering if it's, like, maybe him just protecting his job at some points. But, like, the way he turns around and he's just so nonchalant, everybody's so nonchalant, which I think that's just part of being in the...
In this.
That capital... I'm going to call it the capital, like, Hunger Games-style capital society.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I consider it as part of, like, one of those things that just comes with the society, is they're just all used to it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, coming from, you know... us in the world now today, slash, like, where that doesn't happen as much anymore, slash, like, in her culture, Yaina's culture, those things just don't exist anymore.
Yes.
So it's really hard, and while, yes, it still happens today, sadly, in more ways than one in certain structures and certain, you know, cultures and whatever, but, like, here, like, it's not something that's normally thought upon as being normal, so, like, the way they
freak out about it, exactly.
They just so nonchalantly just kind of go, yeah, well, it's not going to work that way because even though I'm your half-cousin, like, I'm illegitimate, so I have to be a servant. Like, you what? Like,
I love, like, I think that's what I love about every time I've read The 100,000 Kingdoms. I love that political... I love political intrigue anyway. Like, just...
Political intrigue is nice.
I will say that's one of the main... aspects in which the book succeeds, I think, in the palace slash, you know, whatever intrigue. It's very juicy and very engrossing.
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, the first time reading it, which is what you're experiencing, for me, the romance aspect, even though I knew it was in there, because it was one of the buzz things, like, the two things that people talked about the most with that book, if they wanted to be just...
in the know with the book.
Prudy and Rudy. They would talk about the first person thing and be all upset. And then they would also talk about, this book has romance in it. Fantasy books don't have romance in them.
I don't mind the romance. It's just so...
Romanticy online too.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it like a romance.
No.
No, it's like C plot.
It's an aspect.
It is like
plot.
It's not A plot. It's not B plot. It's just like the C plot. It's just there.
I will say she does it well, I think.
No, it's been introduced very well so far.
But I feel like... it was always, for me, it was always not important.
No.
You know what I mean? And I could never decide if it was meant to be more important, but she toned it down because she wanted to reach a fantasy readership, and she was conscious of that, or if it just, over the course of, you know, editing everything, you just get to a point where you're like, okay, there are so many things going on, I gotta cut some stuff. And, you know, so there is a full, like, romance arc, right, within the book.
But it's not the main
point. And I never really, like, after the first read, I was like, okay, love it. You know, felt all the things. Every, like, subsequent read, which I only had, like, two or three, meh.
In my opinion, if I hadn't, one, already seen it coming, but, like, two, hadn't been looking for it in the first place, the scene where Reyna is talking to him and then there's a little bit of, like, of a spiciness that happens at some point, and this is, like, just before where I'm at, where she figures out, oh, I have a purpose that I'm not going to spoil.
Is this a Velcro face?
Yeah, this is the Valcor face part where basically he's like right up in her face, and I'm just like, this is gross. Like, why?
Yeah, there's a scene because they do a lot of face talking anyway, but there's a scene in particular where like a lot about who she is comes to light for the first time in the book.
And this is before she fully figures out who she is.
Yeah, it's like,
and he's like literally like right up in her face, about to like kiss her or something, and like I'm sitting there, and if I wasn't already knowing exactly what was gonna happen, like in terms of like, okay, these two are a character that is about to be together or something, I would have been blindsided completely, because it's not really something that I was looking for or waiting for.
So I have a question,
because I was going completely in a different direction at one point.
Yeah,
so.
I have a question for the table.
I'm terrified of the question. I'm just kidding.
Thoughts, feelings, questions, concerns about Descartes.
Descartes?
Remind me who Descartes is.
Her grandfather.
Her grandfather. I really wish I could remember how, like, what part he plays in the book.
I think...
I will say, that's
I think
one of
he's the first family member she meets, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
so
because
he's,
like, summons her. He's the reason she's in the city in the first place.
Okay,
he's the leader.
Who is the family member from her home country?
There's an auntie.
An aunt? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
There's an auntie. Mm-hmm. But okay. I don't remember her name. But Descartes is, like, basically, like, the big
head honcho.
And he's the reason that they're having this whole entire competition for succession.
Okay, so he's in charge.
Yeah, he's in charge.
Yeah.
Okay.
However, to be honest...
He's the guy who was like, I have three grandchildren. Fight each other, and whichever one is still alive at the end.
Yeah.
Sure.
I have this feeling, and that's just... This is just me speculating and... It's okay if you spoil me on it, it's whatever. But I have this speculation that, especially because he's obsessed with her mom at one point.
Uh-huh.
One, there's like a few things. All right, so let me just lay these all out for you one by one.
Her mom, his daughter.
I think there's some like faux-cest thing going on, which is going to probably play along at some point, that he's maybe possibly seeing her, like, her as her mom, in her, and is using that as, like, this, like, I was in love with my daughter, no cap, creepy way, as, like, a thing, and wanting her to, because he's been alive for, like, ever, and they're basically using pumping magic in him to keeping him alive at this point.
Yeah.
But, like, he's using that as a way to, like, perpetuate it, continue further.
Sure, I could see what
you're
saying. Yeah.
Granted, also, I don't think this is exactly what's going to happen, but it would have been really funny if it was, because it would have made so much more sense. If Descartes was even more sinister than that, and they did some, like, Orochimaru Sasuke thing, where, like, he was basically bringing her in so he can take over her body and continue running the kingdom. That's not going to happen, but I thought that would be fun.
Okay. I mean, N.K. Jemisin is a huge anime nerd, so
I mean,
don't count it out.
I'm not going to count it out, but I just thought that would be really, really funny if that was, like, the whole entire reason he called her in the first place.
Uh-huh.
Three, not as sinister as the first one that I'm going with, but, like, because he wanted his daughter to rule, he's kind of low-key pushing all of this stuff with, like, all of the gods in there. To make her the next ruler, like, on purpose. Like, he's purposefully setting up Samina and the other character, the brother who's...
The useless brother.
The useless one that nobody remembers.
No one cares about.
He's pushing those two in there to test her.
Sure. Like, right, yeah.
But he's fully set, especially because he called her in from some place that, like, she didn't want to be there in the first place, and he forgot about her for, like, years on end.
He forgot about her.
Yes. Brought her in specifically to put her on the throne, and he wouldn't have done... He would have just, like, left her alone if he, like, wasn't considering her in the first place, and he didn't really care.
Well, just remember something very core about Descartes. He is a Class A bigot.
Well, there's that, too, but to be
like,
honest...
Class
where
A.
Where I'm at right now, he has not been in the book much. She has not talked...
That's true.
She has not talked to him.
Yeah, there's a huge...
At all.
Yeah, there's a... Yeah, but...
She has not talked to him at all, except for that first time where she was, like, grandfather or whatever, and he told her to be part in the succession. She has not talked to him since.
Buckle up.
Which, I understand that I'm a little bit of buckle up buttercup for that, but, like...
She has
not talked to him yet, so, like, there's a lot of, like, speculation...
I'll admit that
Descartes
is one of those characters that I just love. because I hate him. Like, he just, you know, like...
He's one of those villains that you love specifically because they're the villain.
He's the kind... Yeah, exactly. He's the kind of character that would watch the original Star Wars trilogy and laugh because Emperor Palpatine wasn't scary enough. Like, he'd just be like, oh, that stupid man.
He'd watch the Saw movie and just be like...
Yeah, like Descartes has no... And the problem is that... Descartes' feelings about things are so cut and dry. Like, he's just very much like, so, you're here because you're going to rule. Do you have a problem with that?
Yeah.
And if you even attempt to express a problem, he's like, well...
I don't care.
Your mother was my daughter, which makes you my granddaughter. Also, you look just like her, despite who she chose to marry. Need I go on? Like, he's just...
Oh,
he's
yeah.
very... He so gives, looks like, Olivia Colman's Queen Elizabeth from seasons 3 and 4 of The Crown.
So that she looks like her mom, right? Like, she's, like, basically, like, carbon copy of her mom.
There's a couple of, like, distinguishing features that are, like, oh, those clearly came from some other bloodline, which means she wasn't pure. So, obviously, you know, that's her dad, but...
Right, but, like, at the same time, she's, like, a carbon copy of her mom, plus the... the thing that she discovers about herself later, then the question then becomes, was her mom originally supposed to be the reincarnation, but because she left... Because of maybe what she found out, then they could... Remember, because when she finds out, she passes out and they said, well, if we kill her, we can wait a few more decades.
Well, Grant, what do you think about all this?
About all of this? Sorry. I mean,
I'm really good at sniffing those things out, so I know that that's a factor.
You but keep like, reading. You know I'm so I mean? Curious to see where this is going to go for you.
Can I just make some general comments on
sure.
the
yeah,
absolutely.
So, no, not allowed. No, I'm kidding.
Leave.
So I'll start with some positives. Like, I really, as I previously mentioned, I think one of her greatest strengths is the intrigue aspect to it, because that's always interesting to me.
Yeah, definitely.
Her character work is also very good, typically.
Yeah,
typically. Like, what we all love, Yaina.
Yeah.
We all
actually, my favorite character is Sia, so you can all like.
Sia?
Well, that's also
Sia is great. Yeah, her.
You
her
can
Sia.
All fight me. Sia is my son, and I will like, if anything happened to Sia, you know.
Yes,
read Kingdom of Gods.
I can't read it yet. I have to read the rest of the series.
So,
and the premise, I think is genius.
Yeah.
Just the idea of like gods being in servitude to the upper crust of society.
Isn't that interesting? It is
very interesting, and she pulls it off, I feel like, and I love the inter-god drama as well.
Well, yeah, right, exactly,
However, I was talking to somebody else who read this book as well, and they kind of concurred beyond those things, like the intrigue and a few characters.
Yeah.
Like, even, like, a week after I read it, I just could not remember anything.
I
enjoyed the experience.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the characters in the world. But the actual plot machinations, they just escaped me. And the same goes for the rest of the trilogy.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And to me, it definitely has the feeling of, like, because that was her first book, right?
Yeah,
feels like a debut novel/series to me.
Yeah. Well, I guess I should clarify. It was her first published debut novel. Mm-hmm. She had actually written her duology series that came out after that. She'd written the Dreamblood first and gotten her agent with it, and all of the publishers roundly rejected her, saying really peculiarly racist things like, we don't know who this book is for, even though it's...
It's just a book.
Yeah, I know.
It's for everyone. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking. If anybody ever asks me that question, I'm like, it's for everyone. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And I know when she won the Hugo, there was definitely some more than blatant racism going on from some certain authors.
Mr. Silverberg.
This is tea that I don't know, but we don't have time for, so you can tell me later.
Also Vox Day, but nobody really pays attention to Vox
Day.
I don't even know who that is.
Well, he's an openly racist.
I don't even know who that is.
Don't worry about it.
I don't want it at this point
if he's a problematic dude.
Vox Day makes Andrew Tate look tame.
Yeah.
Fresh and fit tit.
Yeah.
Okay.
What was I saying? I very much feel And at her, like, it's not a foreword, it's like whatever's at the end of the book.
Oh, yeah, and afterward.
And afterward, yes. Oh, yeah, afterward. she does mention her heavy anime influence, and I, for one, can definitely feel that.
It's there.
Not always to its benefit, I feel like. It feels like a... People talk about, like, the infantilization of fiction and stuff. I feel like that, in general, that's kind of an overreaction or whatever. But I feel... I don't know. I feel like that part got on my nerves. It just felt very... Episodic's not the right word. I'm not going to dwell on this, but I could feel the influence, and I wasn't the craziest about it.
Sure.
And that kind of continues in the series as well. Yeah. It feels like a TV show, almost.
Like, is it like a chapter-by-chapter thing? Is that what you're talking about? Yeah, like, how, like, each chapter just seems like something brand new?
I would say that it is certainly... I would say, at least with an example of the 100,000 Kingdoms, I think it is very episodic. Each chapter feels like a discrete, you know, it continues the story, but it's also, you know, it doesn't feel, I think that, and I think that that can lend itself. I've heard this about other, like, episodic things, like even Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone has been called out for this.
You could have made it into a whole entire TV show, which is...
More than that. It's just the idea that, like, episodic novels can be challenging to conceive of as a whole, which is how we tend to perceive of novels at this point in our history of, you know, writing novels is that, or reading novels is that, you know, that episodic feature feels strange. Whereas, like, in a place like comic books, if you're reading a graphic novel... omnibus, for example, I'm reading the X-Men ones, right? You know,
and do you know if she was a manga reader as well, or if she was
So her favorite her favorite manga is Fullmetal Alchemist.
Oh, that makes so much more sense. Yeah.
So
with the way that she's writing this,
I think certainly like the 100,000 Kingdoms is a seminal example of episodic, like in terms of how her writing works. I would say that. Based on the fifth season, she grew out of the episodic quality, or maybe just grew better at the episodic thing.
And even me just reading, like, descriptions of that series, I feel like I would enjoy that a little bit more.
Yeah, it's a different... I mean, like, it's still obviously N.K. Jemisin, but the energy is very different. Like, it starts out like, oh, okay, this is Jemisin.
Mm-hmm.
But you can still feel she's punching up, and then every chapter in, you're like... I'm furious. Mm-hmm. What is that? Like, it is certainly a departure, if that makes sense, from her first five novels.
Okay.
But she, you know, I mean, I would also recommend, just if anyone wants to do, like, a further reading of N.K. Jemisin, I strongly recommend you tracking down her short fiction. She has a short story collection.
Doesn't she have, like, a Lovecraftian-type short story collection or something?
She has a Lovecraftian duology.
Okay.
Yeah. That is, the first one is called The City We Became.
Yeah.
There's a story called The City Born Great, which is, like, fits within that universe. It's literally the first... the story is the opening chapter to The City We Became, the book, with a different ending because of reasons.
Yeah.
But I think her short fiction is, and I say this about Neil Gaiman, I say this about Stephen King, and I will certainly say this about N.K. Jemisin. All three of them are uneven in their novels, but they're masterful short story writers. I mean, they're because they know what to do. They get in, you're intrigued, it's awesome, it's cool, it's great, it's sad, whatever they're going for, and then they're done.
Maybe I need to get into her shorter stuff.
And it doesn't mean that it's all, like, short. I mean, no, it's a story, but it's still, the energy's completely different. And I honestly think that it's more masterful that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Brandon Sanderson should never write another short story to save his life because he's not good at it. Which makes sense. I mean, you know.
He's really good at long form stuff.
Yeah, but which is weird, right? Because Stephen King is also really good at long form, but he's uneven AF. And he will even tell you. He'll be the first one to be like, yeah, my novels are uneven. Whatever. But his short fiction?
Masterful. Love that
for him. That man. So, yeah. I'm so glad that you both, you know, enjoyed the book and that you're into it. Yeah, I mean, you know me. I'm not the kind of person who's like, you must enjoy what I enjoy. I don't care. Like, if you hate it, tell me why you hate it. I want to know more, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. But hooray. Next time, guess what we get to do? We get to take a short break and we get to watch Tokyo Ghoul.
Hey, nice. Oh, sorry, microphone people. I'm so excited because I actually was just telling Aaron that I'm going to read the rest of the series, but only for Hide. That's the only reason I'm reading it. Because... And now I really want to just see anime Hide.
That's the friend, right?
Yeah. I just want
to... Anime Hide is so